Yesterday we began our discussion about bittul chametz, and here on Daf Dalet Amud Beis, the Gemara formulates the very basic principle, which is so important. Midoraisa bebittul bealma sagile. The Torah relies on bittul. We mentioned that Rashi understood that because the Torah uses the word tashbisu as opposed to tavaru, meaning tavaru would have been our anticipated word, because tavaru indicates bir chametz, which means total annihilation of the chametz. Tashbisu, on the other hand, says Rashi, implies hashbasa belev, that in his heart he considers it mushbas. Mushbas means completely gone. And Rashi on Omer Aleph had already gone into great detail about exactly what he declares in Bittul. We mentioned that Tosis Dibra Maskel Midoraisa was of a different opinion, and he identifies Bittul with Hefker. What's common to both Rashi and Tosis is that Bittul, which the Torah relies on, will obviate, or shall we say, circumvent the violation of Bal Yirah, Bal Yimotzeh. Either as Rashi has it because of Hashpasa Belev, or the way the Ri and Tosis has it because of Hefker. Tosus admits that there's a problem with Hefker, because there's certain requirements in Hefker, like for example Fnei Shlosha, that we don't require in Bittul. We never require that Bittul should take place in the presence of three people. So I have for you here a photocopy of the Ramban, the Chiddush Ramban at the beginning of Pesachim, and I hope the underlines, do the underlines come out on the photocopy? Because, you know, when I underline in pencil, it doesn't always come out. Now, I would ask you as a favor to hold on to this photocopy so that we don't have to go through this again and again, because this Ramban is going to come up over and over and over again. What do we have? Two pages in Ramban? Yeah. So again, we're not going to cover obviously all of that. But let's begin from the beginning. He says, "Inyan bittul chametz." This is the Ramban's introduction to Masechta Pesachim. Sheis Kiro Bigamara, and after the word Bigamara, you could add Dalet Amud Beis, which is where we're holding now. The Midoraisa Bebitul Balma Sagile, Vadai Lolamait Bedika Bilvada Amru. He says that it's not just coming to exclude Bedika, meaning that the Torah doesn't require Bedika. Now, Bedika means to look for chametz that maybe I have, maybe I don't have. Maybe I'll find, maybe I won't find. But you know what? Okay, we don't need Bedika, because if he's not aware of the chametz, he's not sure that he has chametz b'chalal, so let him make bittul. But what happens, ask the Ramban, if he has chametz yadua? He's very well aware of the fact that he has a beautiful piece of bread that's in his closet. He has not done bedika because the Torah says bittul is enough. But that's a very strange phenomenon in a sense. You know, psychologically, what's going on? He has this piece of chametz. It's a beautiful piece. He's very well aware of it. He has it locked up on the, you know, has it stashed away on the lock and key. And then he makes a declaration that it's bottle. So the Ramban here, in the next four words, which I underline, but you may want to underline it again, drops the bomb and he says, Ela afilu chametz yadua. that not only does the Torah rely on bittul and therefore alleviate us of a responsibility of bidika to look for chametz she'eini yadua, but moreover, the Torah relies on bittul even with regard to chametz yadua. It's an amazing halacha, because I'm looking at a piece of chametz, so to speak, or maybe it's behind the door, here behind the closet door. I know it's there, and I'm simply making a declaration called bittul, and magically I have obviated all those pages on it for my 11:45 class. I've obviated the need for anything else. The Torah totally relies on bittul. Nami sagile bittul. He says, I'm going to prove to you that bittul is sufficient even for chametz yadua. And here he quotes a Gemara on Daf Vav Amid Beis. He says, Kidamrinan bimotzi gluski yefefa. The Gemara gives an example on Daf Vav Amid Beis where he looks during his bedika and he finds a gluski yefefa. The Gemara says, no problem, he already made bittul. And it seems that the bittul is meaningful even after he finds the gluski yefefa. Meaning, at the time that he did the bedika, he didn't know about this beautiful piece of bread which is called the gluski yefefa. But lo and behold, he finds a gluski yefefa. I think I mentioned to you yesterday that after about 20 years of bedika, we finally found a, it wasn't exactly a gluski yefefa, but we finally found a piece of bread. And the Gemara says that he's covered. What do I mean he's covered? I mean he has no, he's not vulnerable, he's not liable for any violation because he already did his bittul. Now, the Ramban is arguing maybe the bittul could have been effective until he found this piece of bread. But from the moment that he finds the piece of bread and became chametz yadua, at that point, l'chora, one could have argued that the bittul is completely void. But no, the bittul still remains valid, even though at this point it's chametz yadua. Or, for example, the Gemara Daf Zayin Amud Aleph has a case of Talmid Ayoshim Fnei Rabbo V'yesh Lo Isa Megulgeles. A student is sitting at the feet of his Rebbe on Erev Pesach, and all of a sudden he realizes, wait a minute, I left a dough that was ready to rise back in my home. So the Gemara says, no problem, let him make bittul on the spot. He doesn't have to schlep, you know, he doesn't have to interfere with his learning and say, excuse me, to the Rebbe and go home to take care of his Issa Megulgeles. All he has to do is declare bittul. Utna Nami, we have a Mishnah later on that says, V'nizkar she'esh lo chametz lefanov u'bitlo. If a person remembers that he has chametz lefanov, meaning lefanov means exposed, it's right there, and he went ahead, he was mevatel, it ain't no over olav. He doesn't violate bal yiro bal yimotze, even though now he knows about it, he's in possession of it, he owns it. But bittul is meaningful. So what is the nature of this bittul that it is so powerful that it could operate even in the case of chometz yadua? That I have chometz that I know about in my possession, and I can just simply be mevatel it. Pirush Rashi Zal, Dichsiv Tashbisu, Veloksiv Tevaru, Dashbasa Belevi, Vehikshu Olav Betosvis. Stop me if I'm going too fast, because again, we've learned this already. I'm just reviewing it. Da Amrinon Achilek. That when it says Achbayom Arishon Tashbisu, the Gemara Daf Hey is going to establish that means midday. From the word ach in the pasuk ach bayom arishon, which we interpret as achilek to divide the day into two parts, we derive that there's an isur from the beginning of the seventh hour, like the sixth hour on a perfect clock would be from 11 to noon. From noon and on becomes the beginning of the seventh hour. And at that point, he's no longer allowed to have possession over chametz. The Iashbasa bittul he. Tosus asks if we equate and identify Ashbasa as Rashi interprets it with bittul. Hechi mahanya, how could bittul be meaningful at that point when the Torah says Tashbisu, and Tashbisu now means midday, Lebasar Isura, it's after the time of Isu, Amrina Delab Rashusei Koi. Chometz is already out of his Rashus, Velo Matzi Uvatale. If you remember, we discussed this at great length yesterday, that bittul is only meaningful before Shasi Suro. before the Torah prohibits it, but once the Torah prohibited, there's no longer possibility of bittul. The old kasha, and Tosfos has the second kasha. Behod Sanya, we have a brisa later on daf hey. Rabbi Akiva omer ein tzarich. Rabbi Akiva says, I don't need to prove to you that Ach Bayom Rishon refers to the 14th of Nisan, and it cannot be the 15th of Nisan, because Hareyu Omer Ach Bayom Rishon Tashbisu Siyar, that we have to destroy Achametz Bayom Rishon. Umatzinu Avarashi Av Malach and Havara, meaning burning, is one of the 39 Malachas. It can't be that the word Bayom Rishon means on the 15th. There's already an Iser of Meleches Yontif, which includes Havar burning. Alma, we see clearly that the assumption that Rabbi Akiva was operating with was that Tashbisu is Biur, that Tashbisu means get rid of it. It's interesting that the Ramban used the word Biur. A minute ago he used the word Havara. Do you see what happens? So I'm not sure if the Ramban, in the Ramban's language, in his lexicon, Biur is synonymous with Havara, but in any event, there's some violation of a Malacha Doraisa. And then the Ramban says, Dafkahu, it means you have to destroy the Chametz, Ubisreifahi. Oh, here he spells it out. If you had any doubts about what he meant by the word Biur, whether he meant any sort of destruction or specifically burning, he says it's specifically burning. Velo mishtamet bitul klal. Rabbi Akiva doesn't present the possibility that maybe the word Tashbisu means bittul. He assumes Tashbisu means sreifa, meaning burning the chametz. And that's how he proves that it can't be on the 15th of Nisan, because the Torah can't possibly command us to burn chametz on the 15th. It's one of the 39 malachas. It's got to be on the 14th. But according to Rashi, the word Tashbisu doesn't mean sreifa. It means hashbasa b'leiva, means bittul. So what's Rabbi Akiva arguing, that it can't be on the 15th? It's got to be on the 14th. Again, if Rabbi Akiva would have said it can't be on the 15th because there's no such thing as bittul after Shasi Suro, that would make sense. But Rabbi Akiva says it can't be on the 15th because it's Sreifa and we don't have any permissibility to burn something on Yontif. Lefichach Pirshu B'Shem Rabbeinu Tamzal D'Masha Omru B'Bittul B'Al Masagi Mishum D'Bittul Hainu Hefker. Now it's interesting, we don't have it in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, we have it in the name of the Ri. But be that as it may, the Shita Satosvis is that Bittul equals Hefker, which means to declare something as ownerless. V'nafkalan et Torah, and how do we know that the Torah allows you to make something Hefker and therefore circumvent any violation of Bal Yiroh Bayim Motzim? Mishum Shenema Lecha. The Torah says, Lo Yiroh Lecha, you shouldn't see that which is yours. Shalcha Iya Torah, you're not allowed to see that which is yours. Aval HaTorah Shall Acher and Shall Gavah, you can see something that belongs to someone else. Vizeh Eino Shalo. And this bittul, which accomplishes Hefker, makes the Chometz that it's not his. Vizeh Das Rabbeinu Raboseinu Atzarfatim Zal Bibittul. So if I were to stop here, I would assume intuitively that the Ramban has accepted the Shitas HaTosvis. Correct, Ramban has accepted the Shitas HaTosvis based on all the kashas that the Ramban raises against Rashi, that the Tosvis raises against Rashi, which is summarized here by the Ramban. And not only that, he clinches it by saying that the Tzarfatim agree to the Balei HaTosvis. But then the picture gets more complicated. Why? Because he says the kasha. Im Kain, Lama is Kiru Kama Pom B'chol Masech Dezu Loshen Bittul. Why does the Shas utilize the phrase Bittul? Why not just call it by its name? We have a universal concept all over Shas called Hefker, and never is the Shas shy of using the word Hefker. Why all of a sudden Masech Dezuchim? The Gemara substitutes for the word Hefker, Bittul. If Bittul equals Hefker, call it by its name. Mi Sagi Hefker Sheshanu Chachomim B'chol Mokom. See, here I would add a word here. There are a lot of mistakes in the Ramban. Most of them are caught here on the bottom. You'll see all the footnotes. This one, I don't think he caught. I would say, milosagi hefker. Would it not be enough as a rhetorical question to mention hefker? Wherever you look in Shas, it always calls it hefker. Hefker means making something ownerless. Hefker, we don't find one quote anywhere of any Tana, of any Mishnah, that uses the word hefker with regard to chametz. V'lo l'meimer bittel. V'makom hefker. V'shum makom olam. We never found that the word bittel was substituted by the word hefker anywhere. It is very odd here, no? When you think about it, Rabbi Oseh, on a certain level, you know, the Tosus would say that bittel equals hefker. I mean, what does that mean, bittel equals hefker? Hefker equals hefker. Bittel obviously does not equal hefker. If bittel equals hefker, call it hefker. We have a phrase, call a baby by its name. Again, in my case, we only can do that on Shabbos. You know, Friday night, I got up in front of my family and I said, I'm very proud at my age that out of the 40 people here in this room, I remember the names of 39 out of 40. That's not bad. The reason I couldn't remember the last name is because that baby didn't have a name until the next morning. All right. He says, V'chein nami bittul rishus shez kiru li'in eruv eno hefker. The Ramban now stretches his arm out. He does like a word search throughout Shas to find the word bittul. And he shows you that in each case the word bittul shows up and it does not mean hefker. Bittul does not mean hefker. For example, an eruv in this halach called bittul rishus that allows you to carry something. Right? He's not being mafkir his bias. You know, it's very nice that he wants to make an eruv, but he doesn't declare his house as hefker. Now, if you fast forward to the next paragraph, which is on the top of the left column on this page, he says, "V'od kashali shabitul dover pashadu b'gemara below machlokas." He says, "We don't find anyone who questions the viability of bittul." For example, Alice Sugiyar Daf Dalanum in Beis, the Gemara formulates the principle of midaraisa bittul b'amasagile. It doesn't mention any dissenting view. The ilu behefker itmar benidarim. This is sugya daf mem gimel. Beperik ein bein hamudar. Til Rabbi Yossi hefker kimatana. I think I mentioned this to you yesterday in passing. Ma matana adi isa lirshus makabel lo nafkir mishus nosin af hefker adi osa lirshus zoche lo nafik mishus mafkir. I can't just declare something hefker, says Rabbi Yossi. Hefker means that anyone could come along and take it, as far as I'm concerned. But until they take it, it's still mine. That's Rabbi Yossi's view. Now, in the case of chametz, is that going to help me? Yeah. Absolutely not, because no one else is taking my chametz. Imagine, Don, if I make all my chametz hefker, you're going to come in, you know, barrage down the door and just, take away all my.
The goy can take it.
Anybody can take it. You can take it also, Michael. You don't have to be a guy to take it, but nobody's actually taking it. In other words, according to Tosis, it's going to come out that Bittul can only save me and protect me from Bal Yerov Ha'Yemotzei, if I hold like Rav Yossi, if and when somebody takes my chametz. It's going to be a mad bedlam over here. You know, I make my chametz hefker, according to Tosis, and now I'm sitting there waiting for someone to pick up my chametz. So you're right, Michael. Probably would be a guy because a Jew doesn't want your chametz. You know, he's going to have to be mafkir himself. But is the guy going to come and take my chametz? You know, you do a garage sale. You know, everybody know what a garage sale is? So imagine you do a garage sale in front of your lawn. You know, I'm selling cheap all my chametz. You know, who's going to come around and take you? You know, your half baked, you know, half eaten lachmaniot. You know what I'm saying?
And if a bottle of scotch, you'll think.
Oh, so that's how I was thinking. Scotch. Maybe somebody would take scotch. I think I told you my father was a rabbi in Bangor, Maine. That was his first position in Rabbanus. He was 22 years old. So the first experience he had in Bangor, Maine was when a fellow got up to say Kaddish, he said, "Scotch, scotch, yehei rabbah." And he was serious, you know. That was the level of Talmidei Chachamim in Bangor, Maine, you know, back in 1935. Yeah, Larry, what were you saying?
I was going to say that until someone takes it, according to Rabbi Yossi, it's yours.
It's yours.
So you are over by Yerav for those few minutes.
Right. Well, no, hopefully, hopefully, again, in the ideal theory of it, according to Rav Yossi, somebody will take it before the Shas Isur Chometz. So let's say, for example, Chometz become Osir at 12 noon, I'll be mafkir it through Bittel at 11 a.m., and not you, because you don't want my Chometz, but let's say John Paul Jones will come, and he'll take my Chometz somewhere between 11 and 12. So by the time I get to 12 noon, it's out of my rishus because somebody else, John has picked it up, right? But again, you know, to say that the entire enterprise of Bittul, it depends upon the fact that someone else is gonna be Zoche, and only when he's Zoche.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
If you drop a coin in a rishus harapik, it's losing money or nothing, okay? It's rishus harapik. You're saying it's still yours until someone picks it up?
Right. That's Rav Yossi Shita in the Dorm. Now, I don't say we pass like Rav Yossi, but the Ramban says that somebody should have quoted Rav Yossi in this context. Ulahach svara, according to Shita Satosvis, Hifkir Chemtso, if he was mafkir all his chametz, calls manchelo zachabo eno Yehudi, over alav. If a guy didn't come to pick it up, again, he says the guy because a Jew is not going to come and pick it up, over alav. The Ika di Amri, again, here you'll see that there's a girsa change here. By the way, the magia on the bottom, this is very rare. Usually when you see footnotes on the bottom, it's from some scholar in a machon or something like that. Here, the footnotes on the bottom of the Ramban were written by none other than the Rosh Hashiva of his day here in Eretz Yisrael. His name was Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer, if you ever heard of him. He was the, with a, you know, a Ha Rosh Hashiva with a capital H. And he writes the Fan V'od. Instead of reading the Ika Di Amri, you should write V'od, because this is another onslaught against the Shitas HaTosfos. Stam Hefker Bifnei Shlosha Havi. Tosfos himself is aware of this problem, that Hefker requires the presence of three people. And Hefker Bifnei Shnaim Lo Avi Hefker, if he's mafker in the presence of two people, that does not effectuate Hefker. V'hocha, and here in the case of Bittul, is Mevatlo Belimo. Bittul's Bittul Belay. Now he has a third kasha, the old kasha li shehitiru bittul b'shabbos. The Gemara says that bittul's okay on Shabbos. Kidisanya, it's a brisa, mevatlo belibo, echad Shabbos v'echad yontif. Again, what we're talking about is echad Shabbos, echad yontif before shasi suro, but yet there's no violation of Shabbos. Says the Ramban, "Valo hefker nirisha osur." It would seem to me, says the Ramban, that you're not allowed to be mafkir something on Shabbos. So also liyodim lahafkir nechosim b'Shabbos. Why? Why can't you be mafkir your nechosim on Shabbos? Ki inyan sheshoninu. Right, there's a mission, if I remember correctly, at the end of Masech Debeitza. It says ein makdishin. Right, the Mishnah has a whole list of things that are prohibited on Shabbos to make something Hegdish, for example. What's the problem? Why should it be prohibited to make something Hegdish? Exactly. Right. Any transferring of ownership is prohibited on Shabbos. Gzeira mishum mekach umemkar, because you're not allowed to sell and buy on Shabbos, which itself is a shvus of ksiva, because in those days it was very common that if you effectuated a sale, a transaction, you would testify to the nature of that sale by writing a document. So any sort of transaction is prohibited on Shabbos. You see, here at Bosai, this last question of the Ramban touches on what I call a sensitive nerve. You know, it's not exactly clear what hefker is. Normally a transaction means that an object goes from the possession of Reuven into the possession of Shimon. In the case of hefker, what we have is, let's leave out Rav Yossi for a moment, we have what's called a siluk bailus. Do you want to write that down? It's going to probably come up again and again, so I'll write it now. Okay. There are two concepts that are similar but different. One is called Hakna'ah, okay, and the other is called Siluk Bailus. Now herein lies the difference between Hefker and other forms of kinyonim. Hakna is the verb to describe a kinyon, a transaction. So if I transfer ownership from myself to you, that's called hakna. Right? I bequeath to you, you acquire ownership, that's called hakna. That for sure is also on Shabbos. That's classical mekachumim. But what I'm questioning here is, again, it's all to defend Tosus against the onslaught of the Ramban, that maybe hefker is not hakna. It's what you call siluk bailus. That's a whole different entity, a whole different category. It was never included in the shvus, in the prohibition, that the rabbinic prohibition of Shabbos called mekach u'memkar. Because mekach u'memkar means you, as the kone, the one who acquires it, you want a shtar, you want some sort of documentation. Because tomorrow you're going to come and claim, wait a minute, Berzon, you sold this to me. I'm going to say, no, I never sold it to you. And I'm otzi mechavel v'araya. You want to take it out of my possession, say, I sold it to you, you have to prove. So you're going to write a shtar, you're going to make sure the shtar is written. But in the case of seal of bailus, there's no kone yet at this point. No one has actually acquired ownership. I've only removed my ownership. I don't know that that's included under the Iser of Mekach u'Memkar. That's why if you take a look at the Ramban, he adds the word nireh. Did you see that word nireh? Nireh sha'asur li'odim lahaf ginechosu b'shavs. You know, the word nir itself is a dead giveaway that the Ramban knows he's saying a chiddush. He's really expanding the law. V'od kashali, furthermore, asks the Ramban, sheshonu chachomim zal b'chol mokom mevatlo b'libo v'hefker b'pehu. In other words, I don't know if we're going to require three people to be present at the in the case of hefker, but one thing for sure we require in the case of hefker, and that's an oral, a verbal declaration. There's no such thing as hefker belev. Hefker, by definition, is bepeh. And yet, bittul is always considered belev all over Shas. All over Maset Pesachim, I should say, mevatlo belibo. We'll see it on Davav and elsewhere. This, I think, is the bomb kasha. I'll tell you why I think this is the most difficult kasha. You know, in boxing we call it a TKO, you know, when you knock the guy out. This is the TKO because how is Tosus going to explain that bittul is hefker when hefker requires a declaration? I can think about being mafker or something from now until Mashiach comes, but that doesn't make it into hefker. But bittul is belayed. Now at this point, if I was writing a footnote, I would go back to Rashi on Daf Dalet Omid Aleph. Is it really so that bittul is belev? Because you take a look at Rashi, Dibra Maskil Chovas Hador, which is on the bottom of Daf Dalet Omid Aleph, Rashi says, V'omer kol chamira de bebesa hadein v'chule. Do you see that? If you're counting wide lines, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down. V'omer. Or it should say the Omer, actually. The Omer kol chamir de bebeis ha'adein. So Rashi requires Amira, which is very interesting. That claim of Rashi that bittul requires an Amira, a verbal declaration, would seem more appropriate for Tosfos than it would be for Rashi. Because Tosfos, insofar as he identifies bittul as what? Hefker, would require Hefker bepeh. There's no such thing as Hefker belayim. Rashi l'shitaso, that it's called Ashbasa Belev, it's a Pele. Why does Rashi himself on Daf Dalet say the Omer? And he gives you the entire declaration. So we're going to see later on that even according to Rashi, bittul is pretty complicated. There's what's called a Doraisa, and then there's a Drabana. The Doraisa, the Torah relies on bittul Belev. What Rashi says on Daf Dalet, the Omer, that's only a rabbinic requirement. The rabbis wanted to objectify bittul. That's what I mentioned to you in the past, that bittul should be recited in your own language, meaning in the language that you understand. You know, Megillah, you maybe don't say in Lashon Kodesh, even if you don't understand the word, there are words in the Megillah we don't understand. But when it comes to bittul, I mean, to just read an Aramaic text of bittul, and you don't know what is going on over there, it's all Chinese to you, because Aramaic is Chinese for us, then that's not bittul, you know, that's not going to do it. So Rabosai, what I want to do now is stop here. We have a long way to go with this Ramban. What I'm thinking of is that every day we'll chip away a little bit at this Ramban. We'll see. So if you want to make a note of it, we're up to the word V'od in the Ramban. And we're going to see that the Ramban, even after presenting all the kashas that he threw at Rashi, and then presenting the Shitas HaTosus and telling us that the Tzarfatim agreed with Tosus, at the end the Ramban is going to be a lot closer to the Shita of Rashi. Now there's a Tosus here, Hemnu Rabbanim V'Rabbanim. Let's go over what we said. There are certain categories of individuals who lack what's called nemanus, meaning they don't have credibility. Okay then? And we had three people who were lacking nemanus. Nemanus, right? Who remembers the three?
Isha,
Eved, V'Kadim. Very good. Okay then? So the Gemara establishes that on the normal circumstances, meaning if the general rules would apply, then none of these three would be believed. But in the case of Bedikas Chametz, we rely on their Bedika. And the reason for that is because Hemnu Rabbanim B'Rabbanim, that since the entire enterprise of Bedika is the Rabbanim, because B'Rais everybody, B'Tol B'Yalma Sagile, therefore the Rabbanim said, we're going to trust these people, they'll do an adequate job for Bedika. Now, once we trust and rely on their Bedika, then we have a principle called Biyado that we discussed yesterday. Biyado means that I'm always believed to testify about my own action. So let's say, for example, if I want to give you produce to eat, that I claim I was mafresh, shulis, and maisus, then that's called Biyado. Or, for example, in the case of a nidah, she says she went to mikvah, it's biyada. And for that matter, bedikas tolaim, if a shochet says I shekli properly and he knows how to do shkita, that's called biyada. Here too, in these three categories, since we trust them on bedika, we rely on their bedika, because the rabbanim themselves enacted bedika, they said that we'll trust these people for bedika, we'll rely on their bedika. Therefore, if they claim we actually did the bedika, that's called the nemanus of biyada. Afal gav, the kol davreshu biyadam neminen le l'noshim v'avodim. He says, why do we need to reduce? Bless you. Why do we need to downgrade bedika to a derabbanan? Let me grant you that bedika is dorais. I still think I should trust a woman. I still think I should trust an eved. A katan is more complicated, as we'll see, because of the principle called biyada. In other words, afilu midoraisa, even the Torah trusts someone who has biyada, who has the ability to do this action, is testifying about his own action. The ma'isim b'chol yom, this is the way we live our lives, otherwise we couldn't live. Sha'anu ma'aminim li'isha v'yevet ala shchita, ala nikur. Nikur, by the way, is called treben in Yiddish. Have you heard of it?
Yeah.
If you know anyone who has that last name, an Ashkenazi Jew who has the last name Trebo or something similar, it means that in his family they were experts in Treba. Trebing means to take out the certain coins of shmonim, certain coins of it really looks like any shuman. That's why it's very difficult to know. But there's certain fats that we're not allowed to eat. That's called chelev. And there's certain animals, very difficult to remove the chelev. You know, you have to be an expert on it. Have you ever heard of sirloin steak? So sirloin steak, I'm not telling you whether to eat it or not. If you're a Sephardi, for sure you should eat it. But you can go off the block here to what's called Lechem Ubasar. This is not a commercial. I don't get any commission for this. I wish I did, because Baruch Hashem, they're doing well. But you can actually get sirloin steak. And sirloin steak relies on treben. And if you see the mashkiach and you ask him, can I order sirloin steak? He's going to ask you whether you're an Ashkenazi or Sephardi, because the Ashkenazim don't rely on treben. But that's called nikur. Back in the day, they were experts in nikur. We sort of lost the art of nikur to know the difference between this chalev and that chalev, which chalev you're allowed to eat, which chalev you're not allowed to eat, and how to remove it carefully. But in any event, ma'isim b'chol yom, a woman is trusted on kashrus. She'll tell you that this meat that I'm giving you for dinner, my husband, my dear husband, is shchita satmer, satmer shchita. You know, you have no problem, and we trust her. Or the perikam madir, the Gemara Ksuba says, "Gami milchiloso ena meusar." In other words, he trusts her that there was trumas and maisus were removed, and she's believed. She's somechaleh. Well, for example, in yinchala, How do I know that she took off challah? If she didn't take off challah, then I'm eating teva. Now, there's challahs Eretz Yisrael and challahs chutzlarts. And chutzlarts challah is also asur. I mean, if there was no challah removed. Although that's only midrabbanan, that's challahs chutzlarts. But nevertheless, there's challahs chutzlarts. Umaser, and certainly if she says, I took off maser, b'chol mako, we always trust her. And that's a doraisa. Because if there was no afrashas truma semaisa, you're talking about tevel doraisa, it's a very severe isur. So what was the havamina that with regard to bedika, we should not trust these people? What about an isha v'yevad that believed maisa b'chol yom, for trumas, for maisers, for shkita, for nikur, for all different isurim? I don't know why he doesn't mention Nida. That's the pellet to me. He should have mentioned Nida. He says, Mikomakom gabi bedikas chametz afal gav de biyadam Mikomakom I avi midoraisa lo meminele. In bedikas chametz, the principle of biyado would not apply. I'm not believed to say that I did it because I could have done it. If again, bedika would be doraisa. Why not? So Tosis Mishum Deika Tircha Yisei Rasa. Number one, says Tosis, it's a great deal of work. It requires a tremendous effort. That's why Rabosai, people try to get away with a minimum bedika. You know, who wants to climb on, you take apart the couch? Who wants to do all this stuff? Look behind every single door and every possible drawer and so forth. Bechorinu v'stokin. It's a tircha yisera. It's a real hassle. In fact, that's why the maskir and the socher were sort of fighting it out over here. You know, you take the bedika. And he says, you take the bedika. Normally a mitzvah, everybody wants to grab a mitzvah. But not when it comes to bedika's chometz. It's such a tircha. We're going to soon see the Gemara. The next piece of the Gemara is whether or not the Socher could sue the Maskir if he didn't do Bedika, and he should have done Bedika. Who wants that hassle? So this is not your classical biyado. You know, classical biyado means, you know, you take off Trumas and Maisers. You know, it's not a great deal of, it's not a major enterprise, undertaking. Number two, says Tosus, it's Sorech Digduk Godol. And it requires a tremendous amount of meticulous care to really look in every single spot and leave no leaves unturned, if you follow me. So much so that Kidemuchach B'Yushalmi, the Yushalmi is going to tell us in Masechet Psachim, Shemafaresh Mipnei Shenoshim Atzlonios Hein. So I heard once from my Rebbe, what does Noshim Atzlonios say? Literally it means women are lazy. So my Rebbe used to say the following. You know, a lot of people misunderstand statements in Chazal. I'll give you an example. The Gemara says about Kohanim, okay, you're not gonna like to hear this, Don, that Kohanim Ragzonim, that they get very angry. You think it's true? Because my Rebbe said it can't be true. You know, he doesn't believe that Kohanim get more angry than anybody else does. So what does it mean, Kohanim Akzonim Haim? So the problem is that we don't appreciate the context in which Chazal said that statement. You know, we take statements of Chazal out of context. In the context, the Gemara says the following, that if a Kohen gets angry at his wife, we should slow down the process of divorce. That's called what's called a Get Makusha. Whole paragraph. It's very complicated. Yeah, you have to fold it over 10 times, and each time you have to get a signature of the Adim on each fold, and then sew it up. It's all God. So why are we delaying it? You know, the guy always. So the answer is because once he gives the get,
can't remarry.
Can't remarry. So that's what we mean by Zonim. We're all Zonim. But if you're a Yisrael and you get angry and you give your wife a divorce, you can always remarry her again until she gets married to someone else. But in the case of a Kohen, that option doesn't exist. So there were other examples that the Rav had where you take a Gemara out of context and you think, oh, these are pejorative statements. So he said, what does it mean, Noshim Atzlonio saying? He means, the Yerushalmi means that the Chiyuv B'dika is incumbent upon the Balabais. We had a similar concept, if you recall, when we were learning Chanukah, and we had the principle called Ner Ishu Besa. Correct? Now, there is a possibility that if a man is not at home, his wife could light on his behalf. And the same thing will apply to B'dikas Chametz. After we get to the Maskonim, so now we're in the Havamina of the Gemara. But the Havamina of the Gemara was that since the responsibility is incumbent upon the Baal HaBayis, and he shirks his responsibility, says to his wife, you do the B'dika, she's not going to do such a great job. And when something requires such dig the guttle, you know, that you have to go through everything, to rely on someone who feels that Yedem, you know, somebody else was shirking responsibility and pointing it off on me, that's called Nashim Atzlonios. Oh. Utchumin derabbanon mehemminin lehu leisha. Okay, this requires a lot of work in other areas. In the case of Tchumin, if let's say a woman would say that we extended the Tchum usually goes up until 2,000 amos around the city. You're allowed to walk out of that area, but if you want to extend it beyond 2,000 amos, you have to make what's called an Erev Tchumin. You have to put down Muslim Shtei Sudas or whatever it is. So normally, we require very serious testimony, but since the whole again, and this is according to one man the other that says Tchumen is lav d'oraisa, we don't accept that shita. But if you hold the Tchumen lav d'oraisa, so then we'll rely on someone to go through this whole tircha of Tchumen. But otherwise, if it would have been d'oraisa, then we would not rely on someone who's not willing to put in all the effort that it takes to achieve this goal. Okay. Velo katan. When it comes to a katan, as I indicated before, katan is in a separate category. Okay. So you know what? I think we'll stop here at this Tosfos. Let's go back to the Gemara, because we've got to learn a little Gemara today, right? And let's see where we're up to. Ibailahu. Does everybody have it? It's one line below Tosfos Divrei Maaseh Midoraisa. Ibailahu. The Gemara has the following suffix. Kamaskir bais lechaveru becheskas baduk. The rental agreement was signed under the premise, under the assumption that the bdika was done already. Like, let's say, for example, the maskir was in possession of the house when Yudalid was Chal, right? We called it 7 p.m. for those who remember, with Tseis HaKochavim going into Yudalid. And then Umatzo Sheino Baduk. And lo and behold, the truth comes out, and there was never a Bedika. Mahu, what's the law in this case? Mi havi kemekach tos olo. Can the socher who agreed to pay rental fees get out of the contract and say, "Well, look, I didn't bargain for an apartment that needs bedika." Again, you see very clearly that bedika is a big hassle. It's an unbelievable tircha. In fact, they used to pay people professionally to help them with the bedika. They had professional bedika services.
Are we saying that this is stated in the rental contract?
No.
No.
It's only becheskas baduk, meaning that the assumption was that since the house was in the possession of the maskir, the owner at the time of chalos bedika, therefore he's obligated to bedika. Now you're selling me a house with I'm misled into believing that you, as the mischayev bedika, you fulfilled your obligation. And we say that hakol chaverim, if you remember the Gemara on the top of the page, hakol chaverim makes a bedika chametz. So I relied on the fact that you're a chaver, and now lo and behold, I'm going to have to hire a bedika service, you know, that's going to cost me 1,000 shekel, you know, to do bedika. I want out of this contract. Now, Rabosai, this is a very sensitive issue here. I'll tell you why. You could really go one of two ways. On the one hand, bedika, as we said over and over again, is a tremendous tircha. It's a hassle and an undertaking. On the other hand, it's a mitzvah. You know, how do you define bedika? The maskir did not fulfill his mitzvah. The socher ends up in a situation where, by default, he gets the mitzvah. He gets the obligation. From a hassle point of view, and even a financial point of view, the socher is going to have to pay, is going to have to pay bucks or give up from precious time and effort, but on the other hand, he gets a mitzvah for it. So take, for example, I don't know who may have left this here. It's obviously a Lubavitcher or a sympathizer of Lubavitch, because it has Dvar Malchus on top, right? So I actually never read Dvar Malchus. Anybody know, is it worthwhile reading? Is it, I don't know, I didn't get to that. So he left his talis here. There's no name on it, actually. It just has his initials.
It's been here for a while.
Yeah. In any event, so now I want to use this talis. Now again, without going into details, just as we say, milamala on top. Am I allowed to use this talis?
Yes.
Yes, why is that?
Because it's bar mitzvah.
Correct. That's called nichole, right? This is a famous principle called nichole. Michale means that whenever we have whenever we have a financial issue of my absconding with your object and using it for my purposes, which normally would be a gzela, a violation of stealing, because Hashol below Rishus is Gazan Havi. But if it's for the sake of a mitzvah, again, there are going to be many exceptions to the rule, but the general rule in abstract terms is Michale. Michale means that if he were here, I can assume that he would give me permission to use his talis. Why? Because people want to get as much of maximize their mitzvahs as they can. Oev kesef lo yispa kesef, the Gemara says in Makis, is oev mitzvahs lo yispa mitzvahs. You know, the more mitzvahs I can chaperayim, the better. So if I can get a mitzvah because you're going to use my talis, and I participate and facilitate your mitzvah, that's something that I would want to do. So as I say here, in the case of Maskir and Socher, and the issue of Mekach Tos, we really have a very sensitive kind of a fulcrum. You know, we have there's a lot here that you can say and move it in this direction or in that direction.
Otherwise the Maskir might turn around and say, oh, I thought you really wanted to do this mitzvah.
Yeah, maybe. Because, you know, the Gemara says above a comment that if I steal your mitzvah, I got to pay you for that. Asor zum kesef, right? So the Gemara says the following. Tashma, di Omar Abaye, lomi boy, this question doesn't even register on the radar screen. Bi asra de lo yahavi agra ubodki. Bi asra means in a place where they don't pay people. Agra means a service, like a service fee, a service charge, in order to do the bdika. Because in such a case, a person does the bdika himself. He doesn't pay anyone and hire anyone to do his bdika. Why? De nichale, remember we had that word nichale, li'inish, for a person, li'kiyume mitzvah begufe, to fulfill a mitzvah with his own body. He doesn't want anyone else to steal the mitzvah from him. And even though it's a tremendous undertaking, and I can easily pay a service, and it would cost me some big bucks, maybe, I don't know, but on the other hand, I forfeit the mitzvah. So, nichale li'inish li'kiyume mitzvah begufe. And therefore the assumption is that this is not a mekach tos, meaning the socher would not be, again, since as Michael said, it's not written as an explicit condition in the contract, the socher would not be accepted, his argument would not be accepted, that had he known that there was no bedika, he would have rejected the rental agreement, he never would have agreed to the rental agreement. Why? Because we're in a place where everybody wants to do bedika on their own. Big goofy. And therefore, we assume, again, the socher could say, well, I'm the exception to the rule. You know, 99.9% of the population want to do the mitzvah by themselves. But, you know, for whatever reason, I'd rather pay for it. But I don't want to pay for it since the maskir should have done the bedikah. So that claim is not accepted. And that's called, again, another important halachic principle. And that's called, anybody know? If the Sophist says, well, I'm on the exception to the rule. That's called Butla Daito. Excellent. Eitzel Kolon. In other words, the halacha, batla daita etzel kol adam, works with objective assumptions about what a person wants and what a person doesn't want. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you lose something and it has no simonim on it. There are no identifying marks. Can you come along and say, well, I'm not giving up hope? Or you drop something in the bottom of the sea. You know, I'm going to get all the sea divers in the world and I'm going to find it. That's called batla daita etzel kol adam. The halacha works with certain objective principles that even if you claim you're the exception, we don't rely on that. The halacha doesn't operate with those exceptional cases. So if that be the case, if the sofer comes along and he says, you know what, for me personally, I would rather give away the mitzvah b'dika and pay for it than do it myself. So since in that asra, in that particular location, is, as the Gemara says, what's the language in Aramaic? It says, lo yavi agra ubadku. What's lo yavi ubadku? They don't pay it. They don't, what's called out service? Is such a phrase? Hey, there's no out service.
Outsource it.
Yeah, they do it themselves. So he comes along and says, no, I don't want to do it myself. This guy's cheating me. I rented the house and agreed it because I assumed that he had done the bedika, and he's fooling me. He misled me. I don't want to do the bedika, and it's a hassle for me. I called up the service, they want 1,000 shekel for bedika. Now, how can they charge such an enormous amount of money? Because everybody's calling up the service on the night of Yudalit, so, you know, they can jack up the prices. It's like, try buying a hand shmura matzah, and especially if it's spelt on Erev Pesach. I mean, they'll charge you, you know. You know, there's a certain kind of oats that come from England, and it's gluten-free oats. So they import it here to Israel in a few places, not too many places. So if you have a child or you yourself are a celiac, you know, and this is the only thing you can eat at matzah, so they charge you like 5 times the price because, you know, you got. So that's the law of supply and demand. I hold it's probably Isur Gezel or at least Onah, but in any event, this one goes on. So the guy says, look, I rented this house, I'm a sofer, I don't want to do the bedika. So that's called Butler Daitel Sekolim, because he's in a location of holy rollers, and there they all want to do the Bdika Begufe. You know, they want to do it themselves. Oh, now if I would stop at this point, what about Ba'asra Diyavi Agra Ubadke, where the general, shall I say, more or accepted culture is that you pay, you outsource Bdika? Says Abaye, even there, afilu biasa diyavi agru badke, nevertheless I have another reason why the assumption is, and again this is kol adam, there's always an exception to the rule, but we're not going to be interested in the exception to the rule, we're going to apply the rule, nichale le'inish l'kiyume mitzvah b'mamone, that a person wants someone, as I said before, to use his talis for a mitzvah. And therefore, this is not called a mekaftos. Now, again, no one denies, we're all in agreement, that the socher, the renter, is now going to have to spend X amount of shkolim, whatever it is, to hire a service. But nevertheless, in the overall balancing, we balance that against the fact that it's nichle linish lemevid mitzvah b'mamona, that a person prefers to do a mitzvah with his own mamon, or with his own body, and therefore there's no claim of mekach tos. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, mi havik mekach tos. It's hard for me to tell you where the Rashi is. Hopefully you'll find it. V'im bo ha-socher lachzer bo. He wants to renege on the agreement and pull out. Al-yidei al-ilosov. Al-ilosov means his claim. Lomar. Notice he claims, lo kach socharti. This is not what I had in mind when I rent the apartment. V'ein t'na'i shalonu kayam. The t'nai that I had in mind, again, it wasn't written in the contract, but the t'nai that I had in mind, the condition that has to be met, was not fulfilled. Ma'olachzor. Does he have a right to be chozer? Now, underline those two words, ma'olachzor, in Rashi, because may we show him. I'm going to take issue with this Rashi. They're going to assume that the law of Onah kicks in here. Now, the law of Onah works the following way. If the difference in price between what he claimed he was selling him, and what he actually delivered was less than 1/6. So let's assume that the schirus is many, many thousands of shekel, and to hire a service is a couple of hundred shekel, but certainly less than 1/6. Then the law of onah will kick in. And basically what the socher is claiming to the maskir is, I want a rebate on my money. In other words, I can't necessarily renege from the agreement. You know, Rashi's saying ma'olatza, that he could completely reject and nullify the agreement. No, that he can't do. The agreement is certainly valid and binding, but he at least has a right to claim onah. And you cheated me and overpriced, and I overpaid for this rental. If it's in a place where no one would, I shouldn't say no one, but most of the population would not want to outsource it and spend money and pay someone to do the bedika, each person personally gets involved in bedika. He cannot claim I want out of this deal, this rental deal. Had I known, I never would have agreed to rent this house. You know, when you go out for rental, as you and I know, you know, there are many different things that you look for ideally, but the question is, where do you, you know, what's the deal breaker, and what are you willing to compromise on? You know, so if the place needs a painting, I don't know, I'm not going to take a rental here when it needs painting. That's going to cost me thousands of shekels to have it painted. But if on the other there's one room in the house that needs painting, so maybe I'll swallow that because I'm desperate for the rental. And here the guy, the socher, is claiming, I'm not so desperate for the rental. If I only would have known that it wasn't baduk. And here he's shown him again to have a lot of literature on this, because why didn't he check it out? You know, why was he naively relying on the cheskes baduk? But let's say he has the right to rely on cheskes baduk. So we reject this claim. Devarei nicha le'inish le'me'eved mitzvah b'gufei. Now this is interesting, because here Rashi uses the word bevada, if you want to underline that word. Rashi says, if it's a place where people don't outsource, they do the bdika themselves, and vadai, then we have no question that with regard to bdika's comments, we can apply the principle of nichalei le'inish le'me'eved mitzvah gufei, a person would prefer to do the mitzvah by himself. V'inami havi yodeh delo bodek, even if he would have known up front that there was no bedika lohay menicha v'kach, he would not give up on this rental. Ela afilu biasra d'nehi kol b'nei ha'ir liskar b'liskar. In other words, even in a place where the people of the city, very interesting, the Rashi says kol b'nei ha'ir. It's very difficult for me to understand that kol b'nei ha'ir, all the members of the city, will outsource bedika, kol ish b'beiso, instead of doing his own bedika. The ika hashta chisarn kiss. Now there's a financial loss because he's going to have to outsource it, and anyone else in his position would have to outsource. So in this case, you're penalizing me with an extra payment. You see, I was going to give the example of Arnona, but it's a very bad example because I think according to law, the assumption is that the renter has to pay Arnona. Is that so?
It's usual.
It's usual.
It's a very
But imagine
it's actually an occupancy tax. It's not right. A real estate tax.
Right. But imagine, for example, the following situation: that the doors in this apartment don't close, so they don't lock. There's something very basically wrong, and you have to bring in a carpenter. In such a case, then for sure he has a right to say, "I don't want to incur these penalties and these extra payments." That's called chisarin kis. Says Abaye Afilu Hachi, nevertheless, Iyodabe Esmo Dolo Badik, had he known yesterday what he knows today, that there was no Badika, Lo Avi Hadarbe, he would not back out of the deal, he would go ahead with the rental. Why did Nichale, as the Gemara says in the name of Abaye, Nichale Linish Likume Mitzvah Bimone, a person would prefer to fulfill the mitzvah himself, even if he has to pay for that service, but at least he's using his own monies for the mitzvah, and he'll get credit for that. So now Rashi asks the question, wait a minute, if you're telling me that he's so eager to do the mitzvah himself, and he's even eager to pay a check for the service, so why is he yelling and screaming, I want to get out of the deal? There must be some other reason that he's fooling us and he wants to get out of the deal. It can't be because of the absence of Bedika. The Ashkach Beis Achriti the Shafir Bineh. Something went on the market the next day after he signed the contract, and it's got an extra room for the same price or whatever it is. It's a much better deal. I don't know if you've ever had this experience. You know, it's very frustrating. You know, you sign a contract and then you find out a day later, oh no, I could have done so much better.
All the time.
What do you say?
All the time.
All the time. It's very frustrating, such an experience.
Yeah, in real estate, the three laws of location.
Right, location. In any event, so Rashi is saying here that even though he's yelling and screaming that he wants out, and we just finished saying that everybody would want in, but nevertheless we have suspicion here that maybe the reason why he's yelling that he wants out is because he really found a better deal and he wished he could get out of this deal. And as we close, I just want to read one line in Tosfos, and that's Hamaskir Baisel Haver Becheskes Hu Baduk Nira LaRashba De Mishloshes Sar Ayri, that the deal went into effect. This rental deal was binding as of the 13th. The Alamaskir, the Arbasar, if it was on the 14th, Alamaskir lived on. Then the just 1 second. Ah, I see. All right, you know what? Maybe we'll take up this Rashba. I'll just say very quickly. I know we're on overtime here. The Rashba says that what does it mean becheskaso baduk? Meaning that there was a discussion amongst them that there would be bedika. Meaning that the maskir, even though he's not obligated in bedika because the skirs took place on the 13th, but nevertheless he told the socher that it's been cleaned and checked for chavetz. If it was on our basar, that would be something totally different because then the maskir would have to do bedika, and then the Gemara wouldn't have used the term becheskas shehu bodek. Okay, then Rav Osa, I wish everyone a great day, and please, if you can, hold on to this photocopy of the Ramban, because that's going to be a little bit of our bread and butter here for a few days.